People think that seafood means like animals, but seaweed is a big part of our work, actually. You know, when I started sympathizing with fish, it's because I saw the difference between myself and my supervisor at the time, and I could see that they're suffering. They clearly don't want to be out of the water, you know? So that was a moment when I really started to think, okay, no, I don't like this idea of sampling fish just for the sake of it. I think we tell ourselves that they don't feel, otherwise it becomes too, you know, brutal. A reality, I feel like fish are usually seen as a bit simpler, basic, or so all of that doesn't really help. But I do think that people instinctively, when you talk to them about, like, people who work with fish, they say, yeah, you're right, actually, yeah, it's obvious the fish is not enjoying this experience, you know. Our vision is definitely of a world where there's no aquatic animals suffering, but we realize that if we want to make progress, there's a continuum there on that path to a suffering-free future. What can we do in the interim to make progress? And definitely the sector is only growing. I'm trying to confront the reality on the ground, and when I see the World Bank give billions to countries to advance these food systems, I see how urgent it is to meet the reality today instead of talk about what kind of ideal world, like you said, utopian. Sustainability is no longer, like, the word doesn't really have much meaning, which becomes so overused. So if you forget sustainability, another term I like is responsible. So yeah, there's many examples of things that can be done in a better way, you know? If we leave aside this whole, like, should we or shouldn't we, at least can we do things better? And there's usually things that we can do to improve.
Hello, beautiful Sanos Planet community. It's amazing that you're here today again. And like you can hear today, we have an English podcast episode again with an amazing, beautiful person here. I'm very, very thankful to be allowed to interview Wassim Imam. Thank you so much for your time, Wassim, to be here. It's really amazing. And Wassim, for everybody who doesn't know him yet, maybe you can see it if you watch the YouTube channel, you can see the logo. ESR. He is the founder and executive director of ESR, which is the Ethical Seafood Research. And before I start to interview Wassim, I want to make an important point, which I think it's really important. We will talk about a topic that is a bit, it's a hard one, even for me. And I know for Wassim too, and I'm so thankful that he works on these topics. I personally became vegetarian about in 2013, something like that, after I freed a grouper from a ghost net that later swam with me side by side and looked me deep into my eyes and into my heart. And for saving his life, he was like saying thank you to me. That's 13 years ago now. And since 10 years now, I live a vegan lifestyle. And I am an open book. I'm real honest, try to really be open for about all the topic we are talking about. So some of my friends listening to this podcast today might wonder, why do I interview someone talking about ethical seafood while I myself give my best to support people not harming any animal at all, right? So the idea of ethical seafood is something I naturally agree with, or it is something I naturally maybe, yeah, it's a hard topic. I believe animals are not here for us to be used, and that includes, of course, fish and all living beings in this world. So yes, this conversation comes with some difficult questions, but that is exactly why this episode matters so much, in my opinion. And that is why I am very, very thankful to you, Wassim, to be here today, sharing your insights with our community, talking openly about a topic that is a harder one. And I think that real change does not only happen when we speak with the people who already agree and think and act exactly as we do, but in any topic, doesn't matter about animals or other food choice or whatever it is, but long-term change, and that's what we really need, happens when we are willing to listen, to challenge, and also challenge ourselves and to explore the gray areas between today's reality in the world. We hope to create a future for tomorrow, let's say. Millions of animals at the moment are suffering in aquacultures right now. While many vegans advocate for ending animal exploitation entirely, which I logically would agree with and do agree with, there are billions of people creating a living by using and selling animal products. So to put my wish of a fair world onto everyone will be very utopic, I think. That's why I think it is so important that there are also people working to reduce the suffering step by step within an existing system. And that is exactly what Wassim is doing. And that is why it is so important. That's why I invited Wassim today to talk in this podcast and share his knowledge. And this will be a really important and good episode. I know that already right now. Because I don't want to avoid difficult facts. I want to face them openly. And because progress needs honest dialogue, because compassion should never be afraid of conversation. And because if we truly care about animals, we should be willing to discuss every path that may reduce their pain. So this is not a conversation about abandoning my values or something. It is exactly the opposite. It is a conversation about testing them, deepening them, and asking how I myself also can support the change that we really need. Wasim and me, we may not completely agree in everything. That's normal. That's always like that. But we share the same goal of reducing suffering and creating a more compassionate world. So I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much, Wasim, for being here. This was a long introduction, but I think this topic is very important to make it clear, especially because people know me as a vegan, a vegan activist. So this is a topic, yeah, it's a big one. So thank you, first of all, and welcome to this podcast. Let's say like that. I let you say hello first.
Thank you very much. No, yeah, that was definitely the longest introduction I've ever had an episode I've done. But thank you. It's really great to be here. I know we've been talking for some months now about working together. So it's nice to have a chance to discuss our work, well, my work with your audience and yourself in this context. Yeah. But I want to say maybe I'll start off with a bit of a controversial rebuttal to what you're saying. So people think that seafood means like animals, but seaweed is a big part of our work, actually, and I don't think anyone would argue that seaweed, there are some issues with seaweed, but it can be a very highly nutritious source of nutrients, and also there are low sentient organisms like mussels and oysters and clams, all kind of well, I don't want to say shellfish, but yes. So it doesn't have to be mollusks is the word I'm looking for. Sorry. Yeah. So seafood doesn't have to be, fish, even though we do a lot of work with fish. So, and of course, we will talk about, and of course, you have alluded to the fact that a lot of the places that we work, there are very few alternatives. So, it's difficult to project a vegan mindset onto those places. But anyway, let's get into it.
Yeah,
Thank you
let's
for
get
having me.
into it. Thank you so much. This is really, really interesting. And especially because of seaweed, that's something I'm very, very interested as well. And I mean, I eat seaweed and fish do eat seaweed, and they also create and accumulate omega-3 because they eat seaweed or ate fish that ate seaweed before. So there are many, many topics that we can talk about. So, but if we go into every detail, we might need about 3 hours for this podcast. Like, you talk a lot about the rapid expansion of aquacultures and why animals' welfare needs to be part of that growth. And I totally agree with that. Before we jump into the deep talk and the discussion, maybe can you share a little bit about yourself? Like, who are you, so that the audience can also get to know you a little bit better? Where do you come from? And maybe also, how did you even start the work with ESR? Why? What was the moment that changed, maybe changed something in you that you said, I have to do something about this because this is, it's crazy, because you have seen a lot of crazy too. So maybe you share a little bit about yourself first.
Yeah. So I'm an aquatic ecologist. I guess I could say marine biologist, but really I work with habitats and how animals, aquatic animals, live in habitats more than the sort of like, diving with dolphins and so on. But during my degree in Canada, I did a work placement. Well, actually, my studies were a bit more general then. Well, I'll come back to the. Some of your other questions later on in this answer, but during my studies, I did a work placement with the Canadian government. Actually, the government of the province I was living in Ontario, and I was assisting a senior scientist in collecting samples of fish from different places in the province, and we were analyzing them for contaminant levels in order to publish the guide of what's the safe levels to eat. Of fish that are caught by recreational fishing from different areas. And basically, pregnant women, older people, children have to avoid certain fish that are have high levels of mercury and other contaminants. So that was the first time I ever actually worked in a field setting like that. And of course, you have very sophisticated equipment, boats with like electrofishing technology and all kind of gear that you wear for safety. And I just really liked it. I kind of felt like I'm like a superhero, but like with all this different equipment and so on. So that was how I started liking the area of ecology specifically, but an aquatic ecology, sorry. But when I started sympathizing with fish, it's because I saw the difference between myself and my supervisor at the time. So he was like, we would go out with these big nets and we would collect. So if you know what you're doing, I always say that if you know what you're doing, you can catch a lot of fish in a short amount of time. So we would go out with the nets, get a lot of fish, and we only wanted like 30 to 50 from this particular area. And I could see all these fish that were caught in the net, and I was trying to return them back into the water. And my supervisor was like, was saying to me, no, focus on getting what we need, and then we can return them. I said, well, I can't focus on this one then. Look, seeing all this suffering, and I could see that they're suffering. They clearly don't want to be out of the water, you know? So that was a moment when I really started to think, okay, no, I don't like this idea of sampling fish just for the sake of it. And I also started feeling, seeing how vulnerable fish, aquatic, like inland freshwater fish were, especially because they can't really fly away from problems. They, don't have huge distances in, like the ocean. Freshwater fish can sometimes have very little space to escape any pollution that's in the water, or water levels that are falling because of climate change or whatever. So yeah, I guess I sort of empathize with them particularly, and that's kind of what got me into that route. And then I worked with fish in a different context pretty much my whole career. At some point I found myself in the aquaculture sector, but I didn't really like the idea of working in industry. The fish welfare came up during my PhD as a area that was growing in interest, and it appealed to me, even though I don't have a veterinary background or anything. And so you asked where I was from. So I'm originally from Egypt, and my PhD supervisor said to me, well, why don't like, they had a project in Egypt when I was in the UK, and they sent me there and said, why don't you go assess the welfare of tilapia in these farms? And I did that. I had no idea what I was doing, of course, and then I learned on the job a lot of useful things. And there was a lot of funders in the space that wanted someone to do something in Egypt, so they told me, well, why don't you start an organization? It's kind of how it started. And I didn't really see myself as being a leader, and sort of like one thing led to another, and here I am, and I love the work that we do. Yeah,
Amazing,
I think
amazing.
I might have missed some of your questions, but that's
No, it's
kind of the
fine.
beginning.
It's fine, completely fine. We share whatever comes up because I think all of these topics that you're talking about, I can relate to a lot. And I think that many people can if they open up their heart. Because as you mentioned, you empathized with the animals. You have seen their suffering. That's one of actually one of the questions I wanted to ask you too, as well. You know, many people think that fish don't feel. Probably they are like less feeling animals. They don't suffer or whatever, less emotionally relatable than mammals or something like that. Why do you think that society still ignores their welfare? Is it because they're so different from what we know in our world outside, where we can breathe air? Because underwater is another world. When I started diving, it's a different world than our world, and I fell in love with it so much. But I didn't know that before. And I know and see in my hometown, it's northern part of Italy, there's no ocean around. People have no idea. They cannot connect. They cannot really understand. So that's, in my opinion, a little bit of the topic why they think that fish don't feel, because it's not even an animal like in the mind. What do you think is the topic that people are not so really connecting and empathizing with them?
I mean, yes, that's definitely a big part of it. But I think it's also because we tell ourselves, I mean, the people who work the closest with the fish in the industry context, that I think we tell ourselves that they don't feel, otherwise it becomes too, brutal, a reality. I remember there's a few times when I was taking videos of fish being killed and fairly like alive, and they're being cut while they're alive. And the people looking at me videoing, they didn't think for a second, oh, like, why are you doing this? They just thought I was silly, but they didn't think, oh, we should probably hide what we're doing or do it differently. No, they were just looked at me and continued what they were doing. So I think genuinely that thought doesn't enter into some people's minds, And then when you do have that conversation with people, you say, have you thought about the fact that actually maybe fish do feel it, and reference like studies and so on. Most of them will say, yeah, okay. That's a good point. We do want to treat our fish better. There's no reason why we can't. But that's not necessarily mean that we shouldn't farm them. So that's a whole other conversation. But of course, you know, it doesn't help. The same with like sharks. Remember, like all of these things that scare people about sharks, that didn't help with shark conservation efforts. With fish, which obviously sharks are fish, but like the whole part of you know, goldfish having 3 second memories and like Fisher kind of portrays a bit silly in well, children's cartoons and most books on fish, well, children's books. I don't know if I feel like fish are usually seen as a bit simple or basic or so all of that doesn't really help. But I do think that people instinctively, when you talk to them about like people who work with fish, they say, yeah, you're right, actually, yeah, it's obvious the fish is not enjoying this experience, you know. That is the entry point.
And when you talk about ethical, I mean, your brand is called Ethical Seafood Research, right? The phrase ethical seafood sounds a little bit like, and I can imagine that you also receive a lot of discussions about that topic, a little bit like maybe even contradictionary to many, especially to animal rights advocates, even to me, I have to be honest. Can seafood that involves killing and sentient beings ever truly be ethical? What do you think? And I mean, if someone says the most ethical seafood is no seafood at all, how would you answer to that one? What, how does it feel for you when someone says that? That could also be me, right? Honestly,
Yeah.
to say, well, the most ethical thing is to just let them live. That's for me the most logical also in my mind when I talk about ethics. How do you see this topic? It's a hard one.
No, of course, and we have been, I think, confronted with this question many times over the years. In fact, most of the times when we have, so I have a lot of vegan, podcasters I've spoken to about this issue, and sometimes the comments are like, why would, like you said in the beginning, you know, why would you even host him, and so on. But so as I said in the beginning, you know, first of all, seafood is a big term. It doesn't have to be just fish, but it's true that a lot of our work is with fish because that's where a lot of the suffering happens. So I mean, we do, our vision is definitely of a world where there's no aquatic animals suffering, but we realize that if we want to make progress, there's a continuum there. So on that path to a suffering-free future, what can we do in the interim to make progress? And definitely the sector is only growing, you know, fisheries, aquaculture, well, most food sectors anyway. It's not just aquatic food systems, but if you look at chickens and pigs and so on, the rate is only going up. So we can sit here and talk all the time, oh yeah, no, we shouldn't do this at all, but in the meantime, like you said, all these animals are suffering. So we're thinking of we don't, I'm not into like this whole philosophical debate. I'm trying to confront the reality on the ground, and when I see the World Bank give billions to countries to advance these food systems, I see how urgent it is to kind of meet the reality today and sort of talk about how, what kind of ideal world, like you said, utopian. So the, I suppose, first of all, the word ethical, there's a word research at the end there. So we're talking about how can we make re do research in order to advance a world where seafood is done more ethically. But ethical is not just about the animals, right? So it's about, you know, how humans are treated in the system. It's about you know, supply chain fairness towards our people in the value chains getting fair treatment and compensation for the work. We don't work on those. It's true that we do work on the animal aspect because that's the part that, as a biologist, speaks to me. But I just mean that the word ethical has so many different components. And actually, part of the reason why I chose that is because, you know, sustainability is no longer, like, the word doesn't really have much meaning, which becomes so overused. So if you forget sustainability, another term I like is responsible. Like, you know, you could say responsible seafood production, but I felt like it was just a bit weird to have that in your title. I don't know. So ethical seemed a bit more easy to for people to interact with. That's a bit of the justification there. But I do believe that there are, there's many examples of, okay, leaving aside the fact that probably no animals at all is better, there are many examples of doing things better. There are species that are not carnivorous. So forget, like salmon is probably one of the worst examples of aquaculture, really, because it's not a food security issue. It's not really, I would just like the taste of salmon. Don't, I mean, as a human, salmon, and then you're vegan, so there's no reason to eat things like salmon unless you can't really justify it that much. The industry says, oh, the obesity crisis, that we're trying to help people fight obesity. The people eating salmon are not like particularly, there's no, like, that's not the reason that people are obese, because they're eating salmon, and omega-3s, we know there's more efficient ways to get omegas than salmon. So I'm saying lower trophic species is already an upgrade on the current forms of aquaculture in some places, like sea bass, sea bream, trout, salmon. They're all carnivorous fish, and tuna. Don't even get me started on
Oh, yeah.
the farming of tuna. Of course, capture is another story. So yeah, there's many examples of things that can be done in a better way. If we leave aside this whole, like, should we or shouldn't we, at least can we do things better? And there's usually things that we can do to improve.
And that's something why, that's kind of in the end, the reason cut down in one sentence why I invited you and why I'm happy to talk to you about, because first of all, I don't think it's even ethical if I go somewhere, point my finger as a vegan, and tell everybody, you are not allowed to do this and this and this, while these people live from it since centuries. I can choose to be vegan, and I did choose because of all the things that I have seen. I was also diving in aquaculture, and it was horrible, like horrible. You might have seen a lot of stuff underwater too, so you can share that later if you want to. But that's exactly why we need to see and understand there's always a reason why people do what they do. And it's not just because they are greedy only or because they just want to do bad things and kill animals. No, there are so many other reasons. And like, for example, just simply providing food for their family and maybe having a work and surviving. And I think if we really want to change something, and I see that in many examples, not just when it's about seafood, in many examples, when it's about poaching. If I go somewhere and see poachers and point fingers on them and say they are the bad people and then I put them in prison or whatever I do, does it change the situation? No, because these people are not poaching because they want to be poachers. They are poaching many times because they are in pure survival mode. So where does that come from? Probably from a system that we people created that is keeping people poor. And that's where we have to start go into to create some change that lasts so that people who don't have the possibility right now to feed their family on another option or in another way than killing wildlife in aquacultures or in poaching, whatever it is, then that's the real issue and the real problem. So I think ethical also goes into how can we pr promote better food systems like you do. That's exactly also what is part of ethical. So in the end, I see what you do as a work that is at more, definitely more ethical than to blind out the problems. Go to the supermarket and buy a piece of fish that is cut perfectly. You see this perfect piece of fish wrapped in plastic, and you have no clue about what is behind. But because the publicity doesn't tell you, you just pay the price and you go with it without knowing anything. And if people would know and see a little bit of what I have seen, I'm pretty sure they would question that. So, do you want to share a little bit about what you have seen underwater? Are you a diver too? I mean, marine biologist, you probably have been spending time underwater. So, what have you seen underwater that was in aquacultures mainly? What did shock you most there so that you said that has to be changed or we need to find other ways? Because what I have seen in aquaculture is like a lot of animals without fins, with parasites, biting each other, no space, dead animals on the bottom of these tanks or whatever it's called, it nets. If people would see that on land and a farm, this farm would be closed instantly. What I have seen, this is not healthy at all because these animals are all sick that I have seen, right? In the place where I was diving in aquaculture. So that is kind of crazy. What have you seen where you say, that's why I do what I do? Step by step, we need to change this.
Just keeping in mind that I'm not an abolitionist, so at least, well, there's my personal view, and then there's like the organizational perspective, and I try to keep them separate anyway. But I don't believe that I'm just not a radical person in general, so it's really hard for me to even though I know the facts, I still sort of think, well, anyway, but before I answer that question, I just wanted to say something in response to what you said about sort of what can we do now. And I think if you just keep in mind, not you, but like your audience, that veganism is still less than 1% of the world population, and it's actually in some ways decreasing in some places because for many people it hasn't worked out or it's not sustainable for their lifestyle, whatever. It's not an area that I work on at all, so I don't want to even pretend I know. I just see these facts and I think, well, while certain people are just arguing about this, they're actually a minority. And when they actually realize that you're the global majority is going in a different direction, I think you realize that you're wasting your very finite lifetime to make any impact that you can. So I was kind of agreeing with you actually. So the question
I
about
get
what
that.
I've
I
been,
got
yeah,
that.
I've actually never dived anywhere near aquaculture. Have I? Maybe. I went to a tuna farm in Spain, but I didn't actually go into the water, but I know people who did, so I can maybe speak about
Yeah,
that.
actually it's normally it's forbidden. What I have done underwater at aquaculture filmed there, that's forbidden. You are not allowed to be there. Oh, I was not allowed to be there. I did it anyway because I needed to see it myself and I needed to show. Yeah.
So no, I mean, and most of the species that we work with, they're actually freshwater inland pond farmed fish, and most of the time the water is very murky, turbid. You can't see anything, even if you got underwater. I have been in there. I've been in many ponds. It's horrible because you're walking on this like muddy, like slimy, muddy thing, but. You can't see the fish. Even with cameras, you can't see them. So it's actually a problem we have because to have good welfare, you need to be able to assess the behavior of the fish. And if you can't see them, you can't assess well behavior. And so it's what something that I'm hoping, or we in the industry or sector are hoping that in a field are hoping that AI will help us solve, and technology, because there's some very promising ways that we know how to find proxies for how fish are feeling or aquatic animals. So tuna, yes, there's a tuna farm in Spain that allows you to dive with the fish. They don't see anything weird. Actually, I think they control just like maybe you go into a section and the fish are in another section, but point is they're not hiding their operation. It's not like they find it weird or anything. So for me, having studied tuna biology and I know and the physiology and I understand a bit about their needs, it's very weird that we would put them into these net pens. They're highly migratory. They've only been domesticated for a very short amount of time, and actually most of them are not truly domesticated. They catch the young fish in the wild and they bring them to the net. Well, actually no, they travel with the cages to the place that they end up fixing them. So it's a very, very weird form of aquaculture. But again, tuna, bluefin tuna in particular is what I'm talking about. Bluefin tuna is feeding the Japanese luxury market, which, so when I'm talking about ethical, these are kind of things that I think are low-hanging fruit in terms of eliminating practices that are not essential, It's true that wild populations were suffering, and this was a way of eliminating or reducing the pressure on wild stocks. But I think the bigger questions are: do we just need to eat certain things? And I think that's a question that many people don't ask themselves. And caviar is another one. So caviar, when people realize just how much suffering goes into caviar. I don't know if the people who eat caviar actually care because they tend to be people who are not particularly bothered by this kind of thing. But for me, I think, well, which issues can I work on that are easier to solve? And I think caviar probably can get the government to pass laws that restrict certain practices a bit easier than something which is salmon. The government is very governments. Like Scotland, Norway, Chile are quite reluctant to do anything about it because it's a big source of employment and income and pride. Like in Scotland, it's a big source of pride is Scottish salmon. So sorry, you were saying about what's the worst thing I've seen? I mean, diving aside, when you see the scale of fish being taken from a farm or pond or whatever cage system, there's just a number of fish that are all like flapping about. they're dying basically slowly is shocking. And I would say seeing fish like in the Philippines, I have a video of a lady in the market, in a wet market, taking a fish from the bucket that I guess they bring in from the farms to or the, some of them are wild, I guess, but they have them in a bucket next to them because people want to buy fresh fish, fresh. So they want it to be killed in the moment, but she'll take it from the bucket and she'll start cutting the fins. Sorry, this is a bit gruesome for your
No,
audience, but
I
so
know
cutting
these
the
things.
fins. Yeah. So like while the fish is moving, you know, and I said like the only thing you have to do is cut the gill and then it stops moving, but I guess it's efficient. And of course, the species like catfish that stay, like they breathe, the air breathes, so they can breathe out of air for a significant amount of time. So there's all kinds of horrific things that, without even going as far as diving with in fish farms, I think I've just seen brutal things. And of course, wild capture fisheries, you see, you know, turtles, dolphins, all kinds of things that are caught, and it's always a bit sad. And small fish, you know. That's a
Yeah,
whole other conversation.
I think that many people, because a lot of these things I have seen myself, like also the cutting the fins off and stuff with sharks, for example. I was undercover filming a lot how the shark fin industry works, and it was like horrible, or dolphin industry and whaling and all of that stuff, or even turtle, when people are taking turtle babies and put them in a small plastic bag with a little bit of liquid and some air, so they sell them as keychain. Like what? Yeah, these things that people cannot even imagine. When you see them and you cannot really talk with many people about it because it's so heavy that you don't want to put it on others because it's heavy, but you need to talk about it because you need to get it out of your system in some way. That's a bit of a hard one and can really weigh down. How do you find your balance in all of that? I have so many questions, but this is now a personal one. How do you find this balance with seeing all of this suffering and even empathizing with the fish and knowing that they are suffering? And doing what you can to change that suffering step by step and make it less all the time. But still, you know these things, you see these things. What do you do to balance in your life?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think I'm a bit, I become a bit numb sometimes to suffering. I think it's just a response. Like, I watch a lot of news, for example, and I think sometimes that because I've just watched so much of it, I stop feeling that there's, you know, I'm just objectively seeing information as opposed to like actually be like, oh, wow, this happened. That's so bad, you know? It's not a good thing. Like, even when I'm, you know, in fish farms or places where I know that things are happening that I know cause suffering. So I think I'm a bit factual about things. I think, you know, whenever I've allowed myself to feel, truly feel these things, it's just so depressing. And okay, you know, like for example, if you go to places where there's pollution and like people dump stuff in the sea, that bothers me so much when I see all this like, you know, plastic or waste or whatever in like a place. I prefer to just turn a blind eye to it, I have to say, because it's so overwhelming, you know, and I don't know what to do about it. I can't do much, really, realistically. I know it's there and I won't.
I get you. I
You
get you.
know what I'm
You know,
saying?
yeah, I get
Yeah,
you so much
yeah.
because that's what I feel too. I am most of the time a person who is like, yeah, always optimistic, always hopeful, always trying to help people to change and to see it and to connect with nature, so fall in love with it, because and then changing out of love. I think that's the only thing that really helps in the long term, but it is way too slow. And that's what I see now more and more and more. And I feel like, okay, if I don't really protect my heart, I will break down. That's
Yeah.
what I know. And that's why I have to really sometimes learn how to numb myself. Like you said before that you do that sometimes. I did not how to know how to do that, but I know I have to learn it because it is too much sometimes. It's too overwhelming. So I get that point. And when we talk about, let's go again shortly to back to the ethical thing, not riding on it too long, but do you think when people see a label, organic or ethical or whatever it is, do you think these labels help people to make better choices, or do they simply make them feel better about something and continuing to consume things that they might not even need? Because as an example, let's go away from the seafood thing, but it's the same topic maybe, when we talk about clothes. I have seen a video in Ghana. I know how it looks like, with all of our clothes ending up there on a huge pile of landfill, and the people are dying under these clothes because it's too much. And then I saw a video of an organization talking about, yeah, you can call yourself buying secondhand, but we don't need your secondhand crap neither. We have too much of it. So the secondhand, organic, ethical, all of these things. What do you think? Does it really help people to make better choices, or is it more like a feel-good thing?
So, I mean, actually, and that's part of the reason, Maggie, why I've personally pivoted a lot of our work away from fish farming and to seaweed farming that I mentioned in the beginning. You know, I just feel like it's a lot, maybe a bit easier for my brain to deal with, like the complexities. You know, I just feel like there's no question that some things are practices are better, and I think in some cases seaweed farming can be a win-win-win, which many people can get behind. And I have thought about this a lot, you know, that are we just enabling the industry to grow more and faster? And that's a question that I don't feel very comfortable with. Sometimes you know, certifications, like you said, or improving practices leads to more animals in the system, and more consumption and so on. And in some places, it's okay because there really aren't that many other alternatives. So we didn't really talk about it at all in this conversation. But, you know, I know a lady in the Arctic, for example, that works on sustainable food systems. And she says in her place, in her area, there's really not much they can grow, you know, so they can basically rely on imports, which doesn't at all affect, doesn't contribute to food sovereignty. But living off the land or the waters, or whatever, is one of the few things that's allowed them to survive in those areas. And then, you know, when you look at those kind of cases, you think, oh, do we have the right to tell people in those areas what they can and can't eat? And should they even be there in the first place? You know, that's just a whole other ethical question. So there's situations like that. But I do think that for the industry, the main interest in working with us is because they feel like it can just help them expand. And the social license to operate, as opposed to, well, of course, there are people who genuinely care, but in the European Union's Aquaculture Advisory Council, you might not be surprised to find that Italians are the most vocal, but the Italian Producers Association, oh man, they hate us like advocates. They find us like,
Pain
you
in
know,
the
sometimes, sometimes even get aggressive and unpleasant, saying like, you guys don't know anything, and you know, you don't belong here, and even like some personal attacks, which is not really professional, but that's another situation. But I really think that they feel threatened by people speaking out against certain things, and you know, they feel like it's more red tape for them. I understand their perspective to some extent, you know, but there's no reason to ever have to resort to those kinds of behaviors. Yeah, I was just saying that I'm very aware of what you're saying, basically. Yeah, and I agree. But so that's why I think I try to justify it, but sometimes I do wonder. Go ahead, sorry, Maggie.
No, this is in the end, it's quite I want to say this is quite honorable that you stand here, you sit here and talk about these things with me while I have in some topics hard questions, because I question everything that the system is doing with animals, right? Because everything mostly I don't like. And I think the animals need her. So I question the things, but not because I want to, like I said, I want not to point fingers on anyone. My deep and important thing is really to learn from what you have experienced and from what you do and what you see every day in your work, trying to improve animal welfare, and to know how can we do something maybe even together to help this all to create, to be better. And because I see, and I need to be honest, I try to vegan. I would love to veganize the world. I would love that everybody's happy with all of the amazing food and fruits and veggies that we can eat, because there's so much people are missing because they don't even have a clue how vegan food, how good that can be, and how healthy and how really good. But like you said, it's not everywhere the same amount available and not the same possibility. And many people are holding on, of course, to their traditions and culture, and it's all part of their imprint or of their lifestyle. So it's not happening from today to tomorrow that everybody will be vegan. It probably never happens. even though I wished for it, but probably will not. So I need to be honest and see, look at the facts and see how can we do this in a way that is not as harmful as it is right now, because what we people do is harmful. It's not nice. And yeah, so that's I'm happy to learn from you. So that's why I love these conversations, and I hope that everybody who's listening today can also learn from it to question the things more and not to look at it, just see it black and white, because it's not just black and white. There is so much gray in it and so many colors also, and we need to learn about the backgrounds. That's why I open up for these conversations. So that's why I say it's quite honorable that you're sitting here and talking about these things and telling as well to us that these questions are also impacting you in a way that it's not so easy to answer because you are questioning it yourself. That's honest. And I really
So,
appreciate that.
I mean, remember, I was never an industry, like, I never was, I was always trying to make things better as opposed to
Yes.
like really supporting it per se. But I think when we're talking about like how do you deal with certain things, a bit earlier I said to you, like, seeing the piles of plastic on the beach depresses me. I was saying, I was actually, what I didn't say at the end of that is I feel like how I can sleep okay, or how I feel a bit less depressed, is knowing that I'm doing some my no doing my part. At least I'm picking one of the many battles that this world has, and contributing my skills and energy to that particular problem. So, of course, there's other problems, but at least I'm not completely turning my eyes away from something that I know is not good. So, I try not to engage in things that I know. If I see that the high risk that probably we're just, contributing to things staying the same, I would probably transition away. But I'm always keeping an open eye to, like, okay, can we do this instead? Is this, and we always have to evaluate your work. So, they call it monitoring, impact assessment, or monitoring and evaluation, or monitoring, evaluation, learning. There's many terms for the idea that you always assess your impact as a recipient of donations or funds. You have to see how have you met your objectives, and what impact have you had, and have you been successful, and what can you learn from that. So I think as an organization, we're always asking those questions about whether we're actually making a difference or not.
Yeah, and that's also something I ask myself on a daily basis, trying to make a difference, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure. I hope so, but I try, and what can I do else than trying, right? So yeah, with all of my heart and my values and staying true to my values as well, that's important without being against anyone, but really staying true to myself. How does your work then look like when you're tried or to think to talk about also implementing more seaweed or working more on seaweed, giving people who are working with fish the options that there are other things as well that they can farm and make money with? Do you think that works in the longer term? Does it work good? And are people interested going away from fish more to seaweed and stuff like that? Are they open for it? How does that look like?
So I mean, I see with the idea actually. So I always say that I'm an opportunistic person, and I think seaweed was a bit opportunistic in this context, because I was in Zanzibar. Do you know Zanzibar is like an island? Well, it's a number of islands just off the coast of Tanzania. It's part of Tanzania, and I was there in 2023 doing a residency, and I spent a lot of time with the government there, and they knew that I had a aquaculture background, or I knew about fish biology and farming and so on. And they said, oh, we want to, of course, the blue economy is a big thing that in most of the global south, and the global north, really. Many international financial institutions like the World Bank and so on are putting money into exploiting the blue economy, and aquaculture is one of those pillars. So they said, oh, well, we want to unlock the potential of our aquaculture resources. Can you help us draft a new strategy for how the next 10 to 15 years? And I said, well, it's not really my specific focus, but if it's a way to help, I'll help. And I went away and I spoke to some people. I got some funding. I spoke to a consultant, and we went away and actually started speaking to stakeholders on the ground and doing desk-based research. And it was because Tanzania and Zanzibar is already a big seaweed farming area, part of the world. You know, they've been doing it for a while and they're quite good at it, but there are problems that stop it from being a much more attractive livelihood. But when we were doing our stakeholder consultations, it was very apparent to us that instead of getting into fish farming, which is what the government thought would be the next step, actually, there's so much more they can do in seaweed. And for many reasons, it didn't make sense for them to get into fish farming. Because A, they were going to all, they were, all the species they would have farmed would have been ones that were they're exporting anyway. So it's not a food security issue. And it would have been, you know, maybe a bit too technical for where they were. And there's no real aquaculture faculties, only on the mainland. Anyway, so it made sense for a number of reasons. And then when I got into seaweed farming more, I realized, oh, actually, in many situations, seaweed farming is actually preferable, you know? People think, oh, we want to do fish farming because they've heard that it's good, but they don't really know too much about it. They only hear like the, you know, the part of the, oh, it's easy to make money, or which is not true, but and they hear this sort of thing and it encourages them. That's where the idea came up, came from, and we got some funding to do an economic analysis of when does it make more sense. And I think as it stands, seaweed farming still, the issue is that the raw seaweed doesn't have much value, right? And the seaweed market, the prices fluctuate a lot, and a lot of people cultivate it, and they sit on their stock for a long time, so they don't have this sort of continuous cash flow. And as a result, a lot of coastal, remember, we're talking about coastal communities usually, they end up switching to exploitative activities like fishing. So I wouldn't actually say fish farming. It turns out that fishing is the one that is much more compatible, let's say, with seaweed farming. Because, you know, fishing is very inconsistent too. You might get some one day and next day not. And so when fishing is not going well, you could switch to seaweed farming and vice versa. And that's the problem. We're trying to make it so good that actually there's no need for fishing. Because again, it's not a food security issue in many cases, it's just a livelihood. And that's something we could likely solve. It's a very early, we're still in a very early phase of the project for now. So we're working with an engineering company to figure out a better way of processing the seaweed that's raw that I was mentioning, and also of different farming solutions. So there's one of the issues is that as the water gets warmer, it becomes the seaweed die. So if we can find a way to farm that, you know, you can move the farm to cooler waters when it's warmer and so on, that could actually solve one of the biggest issues. And you know, offshore means they have much more access to space. So we're looking for technological solutions. That's what our focus there is. Yeah, that was a very long answer.
Yeah, and a good one. A good one. And I try to wrap my head around it also to understand and to find also good next questions for going deeper to understand how can it help the people even more to make it more sustainable, more long working. What could be the problems? Maybe even that, you know, if more people consume seaweed more than they consume fish and understand that they also get omega-3 from seaweed also, and that there are many benefits from it, and they would help the local communities at the same time having an income and all of that, and support the sustainable, more sustainable practices to use our oceans, then I think if people understand that, it could really help also the cost to that the farmers that are creating seaweed are more likely not sitting on their stock, but maybe selling it easier, right? And more on an everyday basis. So there are so many things involved. So it's not like just, oh, if you eat, stop eating fish today, but there's so much involved that has to happen that it's even possible that people get to that conclusion that maybe we do it different and let's support that those who are doing that already, right? There's so much. But you can say.
I was just going to say, one of the issues that has come up recently that I wasn't aware of before is that actually seaweed is being used as animal feed in some places. And then we go back to the situation of like, okay, is this just more, is everything feeding into the animal protein system, you know? And
So on land, right? Then. Yeah.
both land and, so of course, fish I guess it was is be using as feed for aquaculture, replacing wild fish. So in that case, it's better. But I think other animals can also eat it. I think this, I'm not sure if it's chicken or pigs or whatever, but there are other uses of it. But sorry, what were you gonna say? Sorry, Maggie.
No, I mean, this is good what you just said. This is so good. It shows also a bit of our hypocrisy in humanity, right? Because like when you know the story about the whale that is stranded in Germany right now, or was stranded now.
Timmy, no?
Timmy, yes, exactly. And that's such a long story. And I feel in these moments also this big hypocrisy, because people go there, they cry about this one whale, and that is something to cry about. And but then they go back home. First they go there, cry, tell everybody how much they cried, and then they go back home and eat exactly what is creating the problem, that these animals are again ending up on the beach. So like it's just, it's a constant hard one. So I think the biggest, the most easiest, or the fastest thing that could change everything is our consciousness. But that is so slow growing. If it would happen with our consciousness, that could change so many problems in one moment. But we need to get there to understand it. Is there something that you want to share about ESR that I didn't ask? Something that is really important to you to go into, to share with our community, to understand,
I
to.
mean, so I think it depends on the starting point for people. I usually answer this question depending on where we're starting from. So if people don't understand at all these issues, obviously there's a lot more educational. We're starting it from a raising awareness level, but I think your audience is probably highly sensitive and attuned to these issues anyway. I don't know if it's mostly a vegan audience
Not
anyway. So
all.
it's,
No,
no. Oh, okay.
sadly not. I would be happy about that, but no, we have a lot of people also that are open on very interested in animal welfare, and they are happy to support. But then I have to be honest, it's the same what I see everywhere. It doesn't matter our community or other communities or other people somewhere out of our community, people say one thing, do the opposite sometimes. And that's what I see everywhere. So it's also in our community. I need to be honest here, everybody who's listening, sorry, but this is just fact. So people talk about the thing they want to support, and then they go home and do exactly the things that are creating the mess that then needs the support to change the problem. And then we go, this is like a loop, and that's where I feel sometimes this is the frustrating part of our work. Sometimes, yeah. And I can imagine you see the same things.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I was just going to answer your question by saying that, we try to take a position on what you eat and what you don't eat. Like, we just sort of try to build the evidence base. Like, here's information and you can do with it what you want, even though my personal views might be different. So I always tell people, eat what you want to eat, but just inform yourselves of what you're eating and be conscious about your decisions. Where did your fish come from? Where did this octopus, if you want to eat octopus, like where is it, what has it taken for this to be on your plate? And are you still comfortable knowing that? And if you're not, then would you do something about it? So we don't really work with consumers. We're working with producers. We're trying to, we I feel like there's a lot more responsibility they have to be doing things differently, because people just don't have the time and also resources always to know better. And of course, if you still want to eat seafood, and there's go for things. Yes, labels have a lot of issues, but most of the time, certified seafood is better than not certified, even if it still has issues. It doesn't have to be perfect, so that's already an improvement. And if you can choose species that are lower trophic, as I mentioned, or lower sentience, and is even better for if suffering is something that you're really concerned about. So I guess inform yourself is what I would say. In other contexts, I would say, subscribe to our newsletter, buy our book, donate to our cause. There's so many things I could say, but I think maybe in this case, I would say just be conscious of your decisions and try to inform yourself. Actually, I'll just say one tiny thing quickly. So that I did a interview, and actually it was last summer I did it, but it only came out earlier this year. And it's a vegan influencer who was interviewing me, and her and I were talking about caviar and salmon and so on. And I said to her, well, I actually changed my mind about salmon, because I didn't know that most farm salmon are actually deaf, and they have like heart defects because of the way that they've been bred selectively. We don't, we're not, we, the industry doesn't need them to be hearing and to have good heart health, because they just needed to grow. It's just like chickens with
Thoughts.
like not exactly. So when I started thinking about it, I'm like, wow, we were fed this lie about how salmon farming is the most advanced, most, ethical and high welfare, but actually it's one of the worst because it's so intensive. And again, I would get attacked by industry people for that, but just because they know that I'm right. So in that clip, she made it like a short. And even some of my own family who watch my stuff, and they don't usually, usually just like kind of like, okay, we'll see me talking about fish again. But this one, they were like, oh wow, we didn't realize salmon like were deaf. And like that one really sort of resonated with them. So when I say inform yourselves, I mean everyone is different, but there's certain things that if you actually know, it would change how you view certain things. And like you say, that it was a whale that you freed? No, it was a ray. What was
It
the
was
animal that
a
you freed?
grouper. I mean, I freed many, many
Grouper.
animals, but the first one I
Okay.
freed was a grouper. One and a
Right,
half
right,
meter
right.
big. Quite big.
Okay. Oh wow, it's a big one. Yeah. So I mean, there's certain experiences that you have that would change how you see things. So I think information is always going to be part of the process.
Actually, I was like this grouper that I freed. He changed my mind on how I see the world and what I want to do with my life. I knew the first time about
Really?
life. I knew why I'm even here and what my purpose is to live my life. But then I didn't become vegetarian right away. I needed a bit of time to understand it, that I don't want to have this support the suffering anymore. At that time, I was still eating fish, and then something happened that really changed me with eating fish. Like I was in Honduras, did my dive master there and the training, and then I was participating in a how's it called, lionfish derby. You know lionfish, right?
Oh
They don't belong there. They belong in the South
yeah.
Pacific, and they were there
No, they
because
belong in, they're from my part of the world.
they're
Egypt
from
is one
Europe,
of the,
yeah, and they
yeah,
don't
the Red
belong
Sea.
there to Honduras, but they are there. They are everywhere now, and they are really growing a lot, and they eat the small animals, the small babies from the others. They eat the eggs. They don't have many predators because of the stings that are really hurting when you get stung. It's not nice. A friend of mine got stung here between the fingers. His whole arm was like a Hulk arm for 3 days. It was painful. Anyway, we did a lionfish derby as dive masters, as dive school. Everybody goes out. If you eat fish, you should eat this one because it needs to be gone. It's too many of them, so eat that. That made sense to me because I ate fish and I thought, oh, this is conservation. So I was going out. I said, I don't want to spare them. Everybody received a spare to spare them. And I said, I don't want to spare because I think I don't know how to do this. If I do it wrong, I just hurt the animal. I don't want to do that. I hold the bucket and I swim from diver to diver and they can put the spared fish inside. So I was swimming there and I thought I'd do something good because that was conservation in my mind. And then I hold this bucket and many more fish came in and the fish had a hole in their body and they put them in the bucket. And then at some point, this bucket started to move under my arm because these fish haven't been dead. They had a big hole in their body, but they were still alive. And that moment, I really felt like, really, I have to say, to be honest, fuck, what are we doing here? These animals, it's not their fault that they are here where they shouldn't be. It's that's what we did as people, right? But they again, like always, have to pay the price. I don't like that anymore. That was the moment when I changed and also my food choice. So I think that there are always these moments that bring or add something to your life that you can use to let your life be changed if you are open for it. And I think that everyone, every person in this world has moments like this. I just think that most people are too much dumbing themselves because it's so painful. That's what we said before, right? It is painful sometimes to look behind the things. It is painful to
Totally
question
agree.
our lifestyle. It is because there's a lot of horrible things happening that we all support on a daily basis without knowing. So that's why what you say, inform yourself, is so important. Please do that, everybody who's listening here today. Please inform yourself because I know that one day someone will have to pay a huge price, and I don't really want your children to pay this price because we don't inform ourselves. Because I don't have children, but many people do. And I think for the sake of the children, please just think about it twice because this all comes back to us in some way. I think so. I mean, That's my opinion or my feeling. What is it? Maybe the last question for today. We can make many podcasts. I think we have many topics to
I was
share,
gonna
right?
say we could make it a series for sure.
Yes,
Like
I think so
I've done that a
too.
few times.
And go very deep then. But Wasim, maybe for the today's podcast, the final question, do you how is it with your hope? I mean, the hope for the world. It is sometimes hard. There is a lot of craziness happening. But there are also good things, and you can see you do the best you can, you try to improve, you try to change some systems from within that need change to happen. So how do you feel about having hope? That's a topic, a personal question that I want to ask. It's more personal thing.
So I suppose I know AI is controversial in other ways, but I do believe that there are some things that are making advances much faster. For example, since you're an animal lover and a wild animal diver and so on, we always talked about whale communication, and we kind of understood that whales were communicating, and AI has really helped us to understand that. But now we're seeing in other species things that in our lifetimes we never thought would be able to crack the code of animals communicating. And I think that that makes it much easier. Imagine that you're killing a pig and a pig is saying to you, "Don't kill me." It might be hard for you to kill that pig. Maybe not, I don't know. But like I'd imagine that having language suddenly makes a lot of these things different. So I'm hopeful that technology can maybe bridge that gap that for us was just kind of only like in movies and stuff. You'd see like Dr. Doolittle speaking to like animals, and also I see things like alternative proteins. If a cell-based lab-grown meat is just as cheap and just as tasty, there's no re or maybe even more tasty, there's no reason why people wouldn't go for that. People are not killing animals because they hate the animals. They just want, So I really believe that. I know technology has a bad reputation for often making things worse, but I think in this case it could actually help replace a need. And a lot of people who work in animal rights, like you said, I'm not an animal rights activist myself, because I guess, like I said, gee, I'm not, I find it, I'm just not. I'm so wishy-washy in terms of my values. I'm like, oh, well, I can see things, but I'm always questioning. So I think you have to be very strong in your convictions. So what I was going to say about animal rights is people in animal rights movement always compare to slavery. They say, the people who are fighting against slavery, they never thought there would be a day when they believed it, but they didn't like they it was so hopeless to try to get people to change, and they were obviously on the losing side for a long time. But look where we are now, and for us, it's not even like it was so obviously going to happen, is what people say. And I think for animals, it's a similar things that like the more societies develop and industrialize and progress and all that, it becomes much more inevitable that we see animals in a certain way. So we're making enough progress for me to be hopeful for sure. Like crabs, lobsters, imagine that now their sentience is recognized in law, in British and UK law. That was, a huge thing that came out of nowhere, and now they can't sell them live in supermarkets. Well, that's not because of the law, that's just retailers, but they're big wins. Chicken, cage-free eggs, it's becoming more normalized in many places. So I try to hang on to those small pieces of hope.
That's a good one. And that's also what I want to also pass on to everyone who's listening, because there are good things happening. We were talking a lot about negative things today, about problems, about all of that, things that are hard and heavy and weightful, let's say like that. But there are so much good happening in this world, and I am thankful for people like you, Wasim, that you are going into a section where you don't just face easy times because people are against you and people don't like that you do want to change the system. I know all of that stuff, so I know how hard it can be. And you are really going for it. So thank you so much for trying every day your best and to creating a better world step by step. And that's what we need. And everybody can do a part. Nobody has to do it all. That will not be sustainable anyway. So thank you so much, Wasim, for this podcast, for sharing your story. And I think that we have so many more to come, or we can have so many more to come, because there's so much I want to learn from your experience as well. And I wish to see also with Sanos Planet how there is a way that we can also support the seaweed farming process, because that is something that makes makes to me personally makes just sense, and to support these kind of progress and yeah, reduce su animal suffering that way.
Yeah, I mean, we're only just kicking that off, so I can definitely come on in a few months and talk more about what we've managed to do with that. I think it'd be I'm very excited about the momentum that we're building around that project. So great. And thank you, of course, for hosting me. It's been great to chat and thank you for you to you for all the great things that you're doing in this world. I
Thanks
was
so
very
much.
inspired.
Awesome. Thank you. We are in touch anyway. I know that, and we will see how it turns out, what we can do to help each other and support. And everybody who was listening today, thank you so much for listening until here, for listening until the end, for really questioning the things and the topics, and for rethinking about your own values, because I think when we know about our values, then it's easier to go for them, even though it needs some courage sometimes. But it's easier when you know them. If you don't know them, it's hard though. So think about your values and find the courage, find the people that are doing it already, and create a network of people that are supporting you in going that way that makes more sense for a better world. Thank you so much, and talk to you next time, and listen to the podcast next time again. And if you want, please share and like and do whatever you want with this podcast. Share it with everybody you can, and check out also the ESR website to also understand more about the backgrounds. Thanks. Until next time. Bye.
Thank you.